Are you ready to update your flooring? Well, don't miss the Lowe's Floor event going on now through October 31st. Come in today and get free Stainmaster carpet installation with the purchase of any Stainmaster carpet and pad. Or check out tile and laminate flooring for only 68 cents per square foot. For these and more great values, check out the Lowe's Floor event now through October 31st. Lowe's, never stop improving. Offers valid through 10/31. Some restrictions apply. See store for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
This is Mark Grace, and you're listening to Ready to Unload with Cal and Sandpete.
Welcome to the show, everybody. It is Tuesday night. It is 9:30 p.m. It is time for Ready to Unload with Cal and Sandpete, New York sports talk podcast, radio show, etc., etc., etc. And good evening on October the 11th, 2011, episode 11-30. I'm one of your hosts, Steve Sampietro, joining you live from the studios in Bayside, Dumpling Sound Studios 2, that is. And let's get this show going. Let's get this episode going. There's a ton to talk about. We're going to have some fun. I swear it's going to be nice. Let's bring in my co-host, my partner in crime, my partner in grime, Calpino. Calcino. Cal. Calpino. Caliente. Mr. Brian Calneva. That's a hotel on the border of Nevada and California, owned once by Frank Sinatra. Brian Calvi. Hi, Bri.
Hey, Steve.
How are you?
I'm good.
Welcome,
I'm real good.
Welcome to the show. You excited?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm ready to go.
Cal, we've been doing this show almost 2 years, right?
Almost.
And this is like a cool night to do the show because there's not a lot of local stuff going on. I mean, we're going to talk Jets and Giants later. And certainly there's plenty to talk about, especially with the New York Jets.
Right.
But baseball is over for the New York area. Hockey has just started up. There's no basketball. It's an interesting night. We have sort of a carte blanche, as they say.
Who says that?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
I can't be sure. Somebody says it.
Like that, too.
Somebody says it like that. A carte blanche. I have such a skewered idea in my head that it's somewhere between, like, Pepe Le Pew and, like, growing up with all these different idealized French people, French caricatures in my head, that somehow when I was in college, Cal, I developed this French character.
Oh, really?
Yes, and he talks a little like this. He is so sweet. And
he's
a master.
Is he a waiter?
He is a waiter.
funny enough.
We had this vision of like this guy who was like a really pretentious French waiter. Who would be like, and smooth with the women, like totally good with women.
Sure.
But he would be like, Cal, like he'd be like, I was a lowly bus boy. And now I am so sweet. I am your waiter tonight, and I am so sweet.
He's got a thin mustache, obviously.
Absolutely.
And his hair is slicked back or in a pompadour?
I'm going to go ponytail now. Slick back ponytail.
Oh, okay.
So I'm going to make him real Euro trash.
So he's from France. He's not from Montreal.
No, 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 no. Yeah, he's French. You know where some of the basis has to be, Cal? Do you remember on Cheers, Henri?
Yeah.
The guy who was always, I steal your girlfriend, Woody.
Yeah.
He definitely has roots in Henri, without a doubt.
that would fit the time frame. Certainly.
You are a so sweater. I love your sweater face. I'm going to make a love to your sweater girlfriend.
He was always, like, stealing your girlfriend and stuff.
Did he have a name? Did this guy have a name?
No. No, me and my buddy Voles used to do this guy all the time, though. And we used to... it was raunchy. I can't get into this, to the version, but... He was just a sonata.
I would expect that he'd frequent the red light district.
That's correct.
Once his shift was over.
The Reeperbahn. Yes. He spent a lot of time in Hamburg in 1961 with the Beatles.
Nice.
Wow, what a show we got. Hey, listen, before we get into the sports and the talking in the sports, we should mention that our producer is with us tonight.
Yeah, he's probably been waiting for us to finish so he can be welcomed in.
Well, he knows the French character very well, Cal. Because the French character showed up a lot in band rehearsal. Let's talk to our producer, the guy who produces the show, Ready to Unload Zone. The Bishop, Pop Culture, PJ the Pooh. Hello, Pigeon.
It's so nice to be here with you tonight.
See, you know that guy, right?
No.
You remember my filthy French guy. I've been doing it for 10, 15 years.
A fleeting acquaintance, maybe.
He is a PJ used to play a lick, Cal, and I'd be like, that what you played on your guitar is a so sweet. I cannot contain it myself. It's so nice.
Imagine if we had put any of that energy into song quality and stage presence.
Yeah.
As opposed to yucking it up during rehearsal.
Yeah, as opposed to trying to consistently be a Far Side cartoon during during rehearsal. Peach, what's going on, pal?
Mother jokes are going on.
Are they all so fat? Episode 1130, Mom Jokes. Did not see that coming. Cal, you got to Mama Joke.
You got to do something to turn the network's head. You know what I'm saying?
That's right. We're picking up affiliates as we go. You got a good a Mama Joke there, Cal?
No, I don't. I don't.
Well, we'll give you to the end of the episode.
I'll come up with one.
To come up with something. PJ has issued a challenge.
Does he have one?
No.
He's got one, right?
Have one to get the ball rolling?
Yeah.
They're beneath me. And so is your mom.
Wow, good job. Apparently, I've decided that those jokes are Italian as well.
Well... Well, the mother jokes came up because mother jokes are what we would do between songs while we were tuning. We would usually rip apart our bass player's mother.
He's no longer with the band.
Which is why he doesn't call me anymore.
Not surprisingly, no one has spoken to the bass player in 7 years.
I still hear from his mom from time to time.
There it is. Peach, we're going to... you are the subject of the fun load. How does that feel?
I'm a little cold and clammy about it, I got to say. Palms are sweating.
A little... Because you are the... I love sweaty. Anyway, how come that they didn't make that into a movie, the old sweaty balls sketch?
I'm still waiting for them to make it into an ice cream.
They did. Or they are going to. You saw that.
What? I'm just kidding.
Oh, come on.
No, I did. I was feigning.
Oh, all right.
Is that Baldwin's strongest Saturday Night Live sketch?
It's got to be. It's the one that's most popular.
Not my favorite.
Give me your top Baldwin.
My favorite Baldwin character probably wouldn't even appear on the Baldwin DVD if they ever released it. I don't know if there is one. But it was put him in a brandy glass. Take any photo of any member of your family and make it classier by putting them in a brandy glass. like it would say, you know, your sweet grandma, and then they would superimpose the face of the grandma in the brandy glass on a red velvet background with a flower. And he's like, anything's better in a brandy glass. And then he starts rattling things off. And the killer was, he builds to what I think was the best line in it, which was, you know, is like, you know, a family pet, a black baby.
Oh,
and
that's
they put up the most adorable little you know, Negro child smiling, and it's so damn funny because you were not expecting it. And he says it with a funny voice.
I think my
pet, a black baby.
I think my favorite is Shreddy Balls is definitely up there because it's. I listen to NPR and there are shows like that and there are guys. I don't listen to NPR a lot. I don't want to sound like some sort of. I don't want to make myself out to be some person I'm not. I listen to Fresh Air every once in a while. I listen to the podcast. I don't want to, you know, pretend that I'm listening to NPR 24 hours a day. But some of the shows that are on there, that is absolutely spot on. Like Phil Schwede could be on one of those shows. But my favorite is Mustache Rides. It's got to be.
Oh, that's pretty good too.
Surely you're not suggesting we give out free Mustache Rides. Gentlemen, that's exactly what I'm suggesting.
Bish, can we get back to you in a bit? We're going to do the little sports thing for a second.
Yes, and I do want to say I really like being called Bish.
The Bish.
Not the Bish. I just like Bish.
Right.
If you're going to put the, then I'd prefer Bishop. But if you're going to shorten it, call me Bish.
Sounds like Rizzo would say.
Things that Rizzo would say.
Now we're on Greece Pyramid. This is, and I'm sitting on my hands as I do it. This is Hickey from Kinnicky. This is, hey, Bish, go flag your log. Thanks, Bish.
Things that Jeff Conaway would say.
Cal, here's where I want to start with the sports. Interesting. To me. All right, the Yankees and the Phillies are out of it, right? So let's start with Major League Baseball. This is the big unload to me, and I'll tell you why. Because we could certainly big unload about the Jets, but I'm not going to do that, Cal.
That's something the Jets would choose.
That's correct. Thank you, Bobby Wischusen. No. I and Eagle as well. Something is bothering me about this. Wow, I just turned into Andy Rooney.
You know what really bothers me, Cal? This baseball. Everybody thinks that the big winners are out. I think the big winners are still in. There's somehow, Cal, because the Phillies and the Yankees lost, and the two best records in the American and National Leagues, that... the Major League Baseball first round playoffs have now become some sort of crapshoot, Cal. Because the two teams with the best record by a whole game in both leagues are out of the playoffs in the first round. It's a crapshoot. This is nonsense, Brian.
Who says that?
I'm hearing it a lot as almost like I'm hearing it from Phillies fans. I'm certainly hearing it and from the Philly media. I'm certainly hearing it from the New York media when it comes to the Yankees. I don't understand how – well, I do understand it. I understand it perfectly. Your team lost and you want an excuse, okay? But the truth of the matter is in both those series, the team that was going better and the team that got the bigger outs got the win and won the series. We don't need to change the playoffs.
Oh, has someone suggested that we change the playoffs?
It's been suggested that a five-game series in the first round is somehow a crapshoot, Bri. This is not a crapshoot. I mean, should they all be best of seven-game series? Yeah, perhaps we can argue that in a different way. But let's not argue that because the two best teams by record during the regular season, you know, by a game, and two games in the case of the Phillies, are out in the first round. That doesn't mean that the playoff system is flawed or that it's a crapshoot.
I will buy the crapshoot argument a little bit. Just a little bit. All right? It's a five-game series. Anybody can beat anybody in a five-game series. You have to agree with that.
Anybody can beat anybody in a seven-game series.
Right, but it's a little, you have a little more of a chance of stealing a series win when you only got to win three out of five games. I agree with that. I am certainly not going to use that as the excuse as to why the Phillies and the Yankees lost. I mean, that's ridiculous.
But
you can't use that.
Okay, so two things on this. One, I'm not making this up. I mean, this is definitely a feeling that's out there.
I believe you.
It culminated today when Mike Francesa had Joe Girardi, the Yankees manager, on. Like, I'm telling you who that is. Had Girardi on today.
Who's that? Joe Girardi?
Joe Girardi. That's right.
Joe?
Correct. He was a major league catcher for a while, Cal.
Had
a long career as a major league catcher. But Francesa had Girardi on today, and I don't know if you caught it. I don't think he did.
I did not.
But Girardi was – Francesa was basically – must have said crapshoot 15 times. And about how, you know, obviously the season is where, you know, the cream rises. And the playoffs, I mean, anything can happen, obviously. I mean, it seems anything can happen. I mean, the two best teams are out, you know, during the regular season. And Girardi even took issue with him. He was like, well, I'm not going to call it a full-on crapshoot. We won 97 games. The Tigers won 95. The Rangers won 96. I mean, these are good teams. But secondly, and I'd love to hear your opinion on this, I think in both those series, those teams that won all those games, their fatal flaws were exposed. Without a doubt to me. The Philly flaw is the same flaw that they had last year. They can't hit. They are too streaky of an offensive team. It's not like they got outpitched in that series.
Well, in Game 5 they did.
But they lost Game 5 1-0. It's not like their pitcher gave up 7 runs.
Oh, no. You're right.
That's what I'm saying. They put together this all unbelievable staff, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's supposed to be geared towards the playoffs. Okay?
Right.
If you want to point to one culprit on that staff, it's Cliff Lee, who let them down in Game 2 and blew a 4-run lead. Fine.
Right.
Okay? But they didn't pitch that badly.
Not
at all. And Halliday pitched brilliantly in both his games. He gave up a home run in the first inning to Lance Berkman of the first game, and that was it. And then he gave up a single run in the he pitched eight innings of one run ball.
I know. And he gave a double and a triple in the first inning, and that was it.
That was it. Their bats betrayed them again. Because their offense is wildly inconsistent. Because when you rely on guys like Raul Ibanez, when you rely on guys like Ryan Howard, who's a streak hitter, Chase Utley is half the player he used to be. Jimmy Rollins has had a fantastic series, but didn't last year in the NLCS. They're a streak offensive team. They can be shut down by good pitching. So I think that was exposed. And for the Yankees, they relied on their hitting all season. And if that hitting is not there, they're going to lose.
It's true.
So how is that a crapshoot? And the Yankees scored 4 runs off the Tigers' best pitcher, but couldn't get to Doug Fister for more than a run in the fifth game. It's supposed to be, oh, it's all about pitching. The Yankees out-hit their pitching all season. That's how they won 97 games. Right? They won 97 games with CeCe Sabathia as their ace. And then Ivan Nova somehow won 17 games. So if that hitting's not there, Cal, you lose. Period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
End of discussion.
Oh.
I just, no. I
oh, not literally.
No. No, no.
That's a quick show.
Good night, everybody. No, but give me your take on that. I mean, do you not agree that I think too much is being made of the idea that the two quote-unquote best teams are out in the first round. So the playoffs are some sort of crapshoot. If they're a crapshoot, how come the Oakland A's never won a series? The Moneyball teams of the Oakland A's. How come they never won a series?
It's not a crapshoot. I mean, well, look. I don't think too much is being made of the fact that both teams are out of it, because that's a big story, Steve. The two best teams of the year were eliminated in the first round. That's a big story. Nobody expected that. Did you expect that? Did you think that we'd be here in the second round of the playoffs without the Yankees or the Phillies or the Red Sox? Did you expect that?
No.
Okay. So that's the story. Okay. We got to break this down into small, bite-sized pieces, because if we try to attack it all at once, we're going to get full quick.
Okay.
Stay with me. I'm on another analogy tear.
I love when he's like this. I love it.
All right. So listen, it's a big story that the teams are out of it. Is it a crapshoot? I believe it is a crapshoot. I believe it really is a crapshoot in the first round. It's not the crapshoot that some people will make you believe that it is, but any team can beat.
That was a bad example.
But any team can beat anybody in a 5-game series if their pitching gets hot. It's a little bit of a crapshoot. What I think the problem is, and where I think the bigger story is here, is the fact that the Yankees and Phillies had such intense expectations on them to advance in the playoffs that they I can't use the word choked, but both teams were very, very tight in Game 5. Very tight.
And lost the Game 5 in their building.
And if you watch those games, the 100,000 some odd people that represented in both stadiums were just as tight as their teams, because the expectations were through the roof. They were tight in those games.
I hate using the word crapshoot. Can we say it's somewhat of a 5-game series can lend itself to a lesser team having a greater chance of beating a better team on paper? How's that?
In a 5-game series, more so than a 7-game series.
That's what I said. In a 5-game series.
Yeah, let's go there. Let's not use the word crapshoot, because I don't think it's entirely accurate to use that word.
And let's also say that if one of your players is Ryan Howard or Mark Teixeira or Alex Rodriguez, and you're relying on them as to be a offensive run producer, you know, a big-time run producer in that series, you could be effed. How about that? When do these guys stop getting a pass? Okay, and when do we say that that's a flaw in the team?
Well, Alex Rodriguez never gets a pass. Let's take him out of the equation.
Okay.
He never gets a pass.
No problem.
Why do we never hear Mark Teixeira getting killed for the fact that he can't hit once the postseason comes around? And it's not 1 year. We're not talking about a small sample size anymore.
No, it's a hearty sample size.
You know, why do we not hear about all you're going to hear about with Ryan Howard is the fact that he tore his Achilles. Nobody's even going to talk about the fact that he failed in this postseason.
No, I agree.
But why?
Failed in the postseason last year, too.
I don't understand it, though. I mean, these are the best players in the game. Why do they fail in the postseason?
But this is what I'm talking about. This is why it's not a crapshoot. This is why these teams, the Yankees and the Phillies, you're seeing fundamental flaws, okay, that are there, that existed. Everybody knows Mark Teixeira has struggled in the postseason. When they got to the postseason, what did they think? He was going to stop? They have to take their chances. You have to run him out there every day. Everybody likes to use the Barry Bonds analogy or the Barry Bonds example, that Bonds was awful, 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 and then he had a great postseason. Okay, great. That doesn't mean that everybody does that. That doesn't mean that every good regular season or great regular season player, and Mark Teixeira is a great regular season player, although his numbers are definitely fading, and they're stuck with that contract for the next 4 years.
Four.
Or six, is it?
Six.
No. What, they signed for 8 years? No.
He signed for 8 years.
So he signed in 2009 for 8 years? So they have 5 years left on that deal.
Did he sign in 2009?
Yeah. Well, because they won the World Series in 2009.
Yeah.
I that's I was talking to Nello about this real quick as an aside, Cal, after the Yankees were eliminated the other day, and just getting, of course, we had him on the show last week. That was great. And we talked about that was during the AJ Burnett game.
Right.
And so I'm talking about the state of the Yankees, and
there's almost Yankee denial there a little bit. And Nello is a great fan. He's a great Yankee fan. He's realistic. He's been through the hard times. He understands that, you know, it's not his God-given right to be in the World Series every year. But I said to him, I said, you got A-Rod there for another, like, 6 years at $25 or $30 million a year or whatever it is. You got Teixeira there for another 5 years. Jeter is not getting younger. You got him at shortstop. Don't forget
Sabathia, because Sabathia is going to opt out.
Sabathia is going to opt out.
And then they're going to have to sign him for another 6 years.
Right. What is this team? And he's not getting thinner, Cal.
No, and I think there's a real cause for concern with him.
Because he
broke down towards the end of the season a little bit, and he was not the same pitcher in the postseason.
No. Well, that's another thing you can point to, okay? Another thing you can point to about why this flaws team and it's not why this team is flawed or flawed the team or flog the log. Why this is that they had one ace, one workhorse, who by the time you got to September was spent. And then he pitched like crap in the postseason. That's a flawed team structurally.
Yeah, but you know what, Steve? They know that that's a flaw on their team, and they did everything in their power to try to get Felix Hernandez.
Not a crapshoot. Still not a crapshoot.
It's not a crapshoot.
Should not be surprising to anybody that these two teams lost that series.
But the Yankees didn't lose because of their pitching.
I'm not sure what that sound is.
Yeah, no, it's the sound of you not sure if you agree with me.
Yeah, I think that's officially the
No, they didn't lose because of their pitching. They lost because of the hitting. They lost because Nick Swisher and Alex Rodriguez and Mark Teixeira couldn't hit their way out of a paper bag. They lost because Russell Martin couldn't hit except for one game.
Yeah.
They lost because Derek Jeter batted 250 and was one of the team leaders in batting at 250. Brett Gardner led the team in batting.
Yeah.
If Brett Gardner leads your team in batting and you've got a Mark Teixeira and an Alex Rodriguez and a Nick Swisher on your team and a Robinson Cano on your team, and Brett Gardner leads your team in batting, if you told me that, I would think that you lost in four games,
well,
not
Cano,
five.
Cano is the best second baseman in baseball.
He's the best second baseman since Joe Morgan.
Maybe he has a chance to be the best ever.
Ever.
He's close right now.
Right.
He's revolutionizing the position.
He's doing things that second basemen have never done.
I saw a great tweet today, speaking of Francesa. I thought you'd like this. He must have said, on base percent, or batting average doesn't mean anything, it's on base percentage.
Oh, okay.
And somebody tweeted, Francesa just said, this is batting average doesn't matter, it's on base percentage. Somebody saw Moneyball last night. Because you know he's never read that book.
Of course he hasn't. He's had somebody read it for him and tell him what they think it's about. And that's what he goes on.
His five-year-old twins, Jack, and whatever his name is.
He gets his producer.
He gets him
to read it. Did you hear, and just...
Start again, I wasn't paying attention.
One last Francesa side.
I had to go get a Diet Coke. Start again.
Did you hear the whole Al Albuquerque fiasco last week?
No.
You didn't hear that?
No.
Do you know about it?
No.
Well, you don't even know. Okay. So a caller calls up, and I still have not figured out if the caller was trying to, if it was a send-up or not.
Okay.
I couldn't tell. But he calls Mike, and he says, what do you think of the Tiger pitcher last night, Al Albuquerque? And immediately Francesa gets dismissive. Oh, yeah. You're going to have to do better than that. You come up with a fake name. Albuquerque. Yeah, yeah. That's a good one. And then he just dismissed him. Like, you know, you got to do better than that.
Which he always does. That's his pat dismissal.
Right. Dismisses him. Says, you know, accuses the caller of making up a fake name.
Right. You wait online. Or you wait on hold all this time for that one?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, give me a break. You got nothing else in your life? So then he goes to commercial.
Right.
He comes back. Now, during the commercial, somebody must have clued him in that Al Albuquerque is in fact a Tigers pitcher.
Yes.
Who pitched in the game that Francesa should have been watching the night before.
That he was at.
Well, no, this was the one in Detroit.
Oh, in Detroit, okay.
This was game four. So now he comes back and he rambles his explanation. You know, everybody thought that caller was trying to pull a fast one on me, but, you know, the pitcher's name is Al Albuquerque. I thought he was saying Albuquerque. You know, Al, I was thinking that if he was going to make it up, he would say Albuquerque. You know, but he was Al Albuquerque. But, you know, the pitcher's name is Alberto Juan Albuquerque. I guess they call him Al. You know, I never heard that. I never knew. I mean, I know the pitcher. I know the pitcher,
yeah.
Alberto Juan Albuquerque, but apparently they call him Al. So they call him Saint. You know, I didn't know. I didn't know what to say.
Oh, marvelous.
Apparently they call him Al.
Yes.
He doesn't know him by the name Al.
No.
Al. But he thought that the caller was making up a name, Albuquerque. And he was,
God.
It was just, it was
classic. Well, he's one of the people that's been beside himself with the Yankee loss, and he's taken it out on the Jets. It's been wonderful.
He's looking for excuses. He's looking for reasons why this happened, because it's not supposed to happen.
Yeah. And again, I point to the fact that I don't think anything is flawed with the playoff system. And now we have two very good division or championship series. And of course the Rangers were up 2-0 in that series, correct, Cal? And they were winning tonight.
Got an update. We got an update.
Are we going to the Ready to Unload news sports desk? Sports information up the wazoo. Yeah.
There it is.
Let's go to Brian Calvi in the Action RTU Sports Desk with sports. Brian Calvi. Brian?
Here's your American League Championship Series update. In the sixth inning, the Detroit Tigers have a 3-1 lead on the Texas Rangers. It's 3-1 in the sixth. Back to you, Steve.
Thanks, Brian. And coming up in a little... coming up at 10:30... Is the chili you eat bad for you? If it's Hormel, it might be. Ollie will tell us all about it. And Kim Jenkins is here to talk about your midriff. God, that music's fantastic. That music is...
Kerry
Jenkins is here. That's correct.
Yeah.
Kim Jenkins. The Jenkins boys.
So, yeah, so 3-1. It's 3-1 Detroit. They're down 2-0 in the series, and they're showing a little stick-to-itiveness.
Hey, Cal, how about Detroit right now as a sports town?
Wow. Good. If any town really deserved to have a big sports year after – New Orleans obviously had their big sports year. Next in line was Detroit.
Absolutely.
I think you'd have to say.
Yeah, although they've had the Red Wings.
Yeah, but that's more like the Canadians that come over from Ontario.
Oh, come on. It's hockey town.
I know.
They won a cup in 2007. Look.
Did the Pistons win recently, too?
No, like 18 years ago.
Weren't they in it?
Maybe.
Did they lose?
Chauncey Billups.
That'll be our NBA talk for the night.
And there's NBA. Come on, seriously, Detroit needs.
Did you say Hockey Town or Hockey Town?
I said.
I said Funky Town.
I want to know whether or not I got to hit the button.
Right. I said Hockey Town.
Okay, gotta go.
That's the producer, though. He's on top of that.
He's on the ball.
Making sure that we don't have to bleep that out later.
Hockey Town.
Well, the Lions get to 5-0. I feel shocked.
I'm surprised. I thought, you know, I'm not going to be one of these pundits that said, I knew it all along. They were the team to watch, and I called it in the beginning of the year.
Who doesn't like to
say that? Mike Greenberg of ESPN Radio.
I wasn't expecting you to give me somebody so quickly.
No.
Calstradamus.
I don't think that fits there, but
it does. It's ironic.
I guess. Oh, I'm not getting the irony.
That was an ironic play of that.
I like that though.
Hey, you want to hear a good use of ironic?
Sure.
Oh my gosh. So I'm with Teresa the other day, and I said something, and it had to do with sports. It was something about watching something or whatever. And she said it was something about watching the game or something like that. And she said, "Wow, look who's being ironic." Or no, she said I was being ironic. And
wait.
I said, "Yeah, you know, like I took her to task for something." And she was like, you know, duh, I was being ironic.
Okay.
And I was like, yeah, put an M in front of that. And she's like, myronic? And I was like,
That didn't quite go as you had hoped.
I ruined it. She laughed. I almost had to. She laughed for a good solid 20 minutes. She's like, good one. Good job. I didn't see the irony in what I was talking about there. See, I was going for moronic, Cal.
Right.
Right. I think you should put an M in front of that. And then I was like,
I and put the O and
carry the two.
Is she she's the type that will never let that go. Will she?
Yeah. No. That was on Saturday night, and I've been called myronic. Four or five times. So,
yeah, that's the same in my house. You have to be careful. If any verbal misstep is just ridiculed endlessly. And now we've got the kids doing it, too.
Oh, that's great.
Which we have to remind them that it's funny at home, but don't do that out in public.
It's the Calvi girls. Okay.
They won't like that.
Ah, look who it is. The Calvi girls. And they're the sharp-tongued Calvi girls.
Myronic.
Myronic. Isn't it myronic?
That was, incidentally, that was the original name of the song.
That's right. Now you get it on it, too. You get it. Come on.
Well, that's how it was written. But they said, no. Nobody will get that.
Right. Jump in. The water's warm. Two more baseball things, Cal, before we move to football that I wanted to ask you about. One was the Theo Epstein thing. Did you see this?
Yes. Where are we with that? Because it's kind of a fluid situation right now.
This is super exciting, okay? What we're talking about here is Theo Epstein. Theo Epstein is I say Epstein because of the Beatles. Theo Epstein is supposedly flirting with the Cubs to take the general manager position for the Chicago Cubs, leave the Red Sox, and go to the Cubs. Now, Cal, I ask you, can you think – If he goes to the Cubs, if he goes
Kel.
To the Cubs, if he goes to the
Kel.
Cubs, I did that to myself because I deserve that.
Yeah.
And he wins a World Series somehow. Can you think of another executive that would be as legendary as this guy?
No.
Ending tapping outs.
I mean, two historic droughts.
Two of the most famous championship droughts in the history of sports.
Wouldn't they be the two most famous droughts in the history of sports? Think about it. Currently.
Right. They have to be.
In any sport.
I mean, the Red Sox one was, you know.
Historic. It was historic. It was 86 years.
Well, not only was it historic, but you know, that you had the poets, the New England poets writing about it. And
it took on a life of its own.
John Updike writing paragraphs about the mystical lore of Long Street, and whatever, Lansdowne Street, where I will never see a championship. And my father wept as the seashells rolled in on the New England Bay. I knew that Freddie Lynn had struck out. Like they, you know, that's like a biblical.
It was very romantic.
Yeah, it was absolutely literary romanticized.
Literarily?
Let's do that.
Ooh. Can we do that? Wow.
I'm doing it.
I think it works.
But the Cubs one,
you know, now has Bartman and has the goat or whatever. And is there a goat? Is that them?
The world there's a goat involved.
You know what gets me? Boy, I am really taking this Andy Rooney retirement to heart. Am I auditioning?
For his job?
For his job? Hey, 60 Minutes, give me a shout. You know what? No, but with the Cubs, they were so close a number of times and stuff. They still have never built a ball club that works in that ballpark. I don't understand it. I mean, anyway, you would think, does Theo work for the Cubs? Will they buy into the sabermetrics and the advanced metrics, and can he put a team together there? That team is in rough shape, Cal.
It's in bad shape, but, you know, Boston wasn't exactly in the greatest shape either when he took over. And if the Boston fans can accept Theo, I think the Chicago fans... Well, no, listen, he comes with a lot of credibility.
He comes with 2 world championships, right.
Yeah, and he comes with having broken the curse in Boston. So now, he's a curse breaker. That's on his resume, curse breaker. So if you have a curse that needs to be broken, wouldn't you hire a curse breaker?
Absolutely.
Am I being too simplistic here?
I think you're being a touch simplistic, yes, but I won't hold it against you.
That's okay. I think that it works. And I think that there is no greater legacy in sports than to be the man that ended the 2 most famous curses in sports history. Curses, droughts, whatever you want to call it.
I'm trying to think of an analogy in entertainment. And I'm trying to think of, maybe you can come with me on this. So let's say Theo leaves the Red Sox, goes to the Cubs, and wins a world championship there, wins a World Series.
Right?
I'm trying to think of, like, give me somebody who was on a sitcom and came into a sitcom and saved it and then went to another sitcom and saved it.
Right. That would be the analogy.
Or is there somebody who came into a movie franchise and saved it and then went to another movie? Now, we could talk about people who have killed them.
Sure.
Shia LaBeouf, I'm looking at you. That guy's killed like 3
franchises.
3 franchises. Killed them.
Yeah. Yep.
And he keeps getting hired for this. We may need the Bishop on this one. We may need Bish on this. We need somebody who went into a movie franchise, saved it, then went into another one and saved it.
Or a TV show.
That's a tough one. I definitely we're going to put the pop culture PJ on this one. Because
Shatner.
Shatner. Wow. Okay.
Shatner. What did he save?
What did he save?
Boston Legal?
Could be.
Yeah. As the practice was disappearing, they brought in Shatner and basically turned the last 6 episodes into the pilot season for Boston Legal.
Oh, wait. I got it, though. That's very solid, Bish, but come with me here. You ready?
Always.
Heather Locklear.
Damn it, I was going to say Heather Locklear. I don't like you now.
Listen, I thought the same thing. She saved Melrose Place, but then what did she save after that?
No, before that, she saved, or after that, Spin City, first of all.
Yeah, Spin City.
Did she save Spin City?
Absolutely. It was on for another 3 seasons with her.
Yeah.
3 or 4 seasons, and she was on with Michael J. Fox. She saved Spin City. But before that, she was on Dynasty.
Also, the actress who was on with Michael J. Fox before that was Death.
Carla Gugino?
The worst.
No, that was Spin City.
Yes, it was.
I'm thinking of Connie Britton.
Connie Britton?
She was on that. You stand alone on that, Kelby.
Really? Connie Stevens.
Bring, all right.
Connie Francis.
The girl from the girl on the first season, it's as if we don't have Google to settle this.
Jamie
Francis?
The girl on the first season of Spin City was Carla Gugino.
Yeah, I'm saying her last name incorrectly, but
Gugino?
Gugino.
Gugino.
It's a Sopos Gugino. But look, Heather Locklear, there's your comparison. There it is.
I want someone to look up Connie
Britton.
Connie Britton. Two T's.
O-N.
She was on Spin City.
Yeah, but Connie, but she wasn't the lead. She wasn't the love interest for...
She became the love interest.
She's not an anchor. Bitch.
No. All I know is we were looking for an analogy, and I brought it.
You did?
I think Heather Locklear is a great way to go. I don't know if there's a movie one. I don't know if there's a movie one. Again.
So, someone who enters a movie franchise and saves it?
Right. Or two movie franchises and save them. Classics. I mean, if Theo Epstein does this, he'll have pulled off something that no executive can say they did. Or maybe you got to go back to, like, Branch Rickey. You know, like, rescued the Cardinals and then rescued the Dodgers or something. But he can't. I mean, this
well,
was...
Harrison Ford picked up after Alec Baldwin, but that wasn't really a rescue.
No, I agree. Because, and one could argue, and I would be that one,
yes,
that Alec Baldwin is a considerably better Jack Ryan than Harrison Ford.
I agree.
Cal?
I would argue against that.
Cal?
I wouldn't do that.
Female Cal is very upset with you.
You I would argue against
you
it.
You would argue Harrison Ford is a better Jack Ryan?
I liked him better than Alec Baldwin.
Have you read the books?
But they're not in the books.
I think Red October is a superior movie anyway.
Hunt for Red October is a far superior movie. I totally agree.
Although Connery's accent is
magnificent.
It's crazy bad.
Look, you know it's a great accent when one of the actors in the movie gets to make fun of it as
yeah.
one of the lines.
Yeah.
When we saw early Alec Baldwin comedy chops there.
Right.
Careful, Jack. Certain things in the ship don't react well to bullets.
Yeah. Well, Sean Connery comes and rescues movies as the movies themselves are spinning out of control.
That's true. They may not be franchises, but he certainly does.
Yeah.
He's just done that. Yes. Good point.
He walked into the end of Robin Hood.
Can we?
I can't
count Robin Hood.
I can't think
it
of
was a movie.
One.
How about? Okay, guys, and how about a genre? Like an actor that
saves the genre
that has revived two genres.
Wow.
Or is that too big? Is that too big a matzo ball?
It's too broad.
Peter Jackson has revived two genres.
Peter Jackson absolutely has as a director.
Yeah.
Now, what was the other one?
What were you talking about? Does this relate to sports?
You know what, though? Peter Jackson could be a good Theo Epstein analogy. Because...
Bernadette Peters?
Absolutely.
Peter Allen?
No,
John Waters?
Seriously, shut up. He takes...
Harvey Fierstein?
Why... Peter Jackson...
Joel Grey...
Sure. While we're going, let's just
keep it up. Hugh Jackman.
Cal with a little innuendo.
I like what you did there.
Cal.
I'll end it by saying this. First of all, it could be Peter Jackson from a directorial standpoint because he took a franchise in Lord of the Rings that was long thought to be moorbound and undoable, and he hit. You know, he won a complete championship. Three times. Okay, three times. They said it couldn't be done, and he did it.
Three ways.
So, right. So, but what else? What is he directing now?
Is he directing now?
Yeah.
Princess Pigskin is what he's directing. Moving on. No, listen, I want to ask you music experts. Can you come up with an analogy in the music world? Has somebody saved two bands?
Oh.
Flash saves everything.
There you go. I think it's easier to come up with an analogy there.
Well, yeah, because there's a lot more moving parts. Like, people are always moving in between bands.
Well, just like baseball, people are always changing teams.
Theo Epstein is that's Slash-esque. How about Jeff Lynne?
Oh.
Can we make the comparison to Jeff Lynne? Who has...
Circle Gets the Square.
No. Not Paul Lind.
Oh, my bad. Sorry. Jeff Lynne.
Oh, Paul Lind.
Oh.
Again, we got to go back to Alec Baldwin.
They get them confused.
Alec Baldwin was doing Charles Nelson Reilly, right? On
that's right.
Yeah, inside the
Bow. Actors. Bow.
Sometimes I do this with my glasses. No. Jeff Lynne from ELO, and he works with the Traveling Wilburys. ELO. He's a producer.
Produced. He was the heart and soul of the Traveling Wilburys. It
absolutely.
Was sort of his thing.
Yep, right. Absolutely. And he, of course, produced a lot of Harrison stuff, right?
In very deep with George Harrison.
Yep. How about Harrison as a producer?
But he didn't save George Harrison's career. Resurrected?
Resurrected, sure.
The great resurrector?
Theo Epstein resurrected the Red Sox franchise.
How about Dave Grohl?
Oh, that's very solid. But Dave Grohl did not resurrect Nirvana. He didn't save Nirvana. He was just in Nirvana.
He was just part of, yeah.
Right. I give you another one. You ready? Jack White.
Don't like him.
Because that's relevant to the conversation.
I don't like that guy.
I'm going Jack White as a producer. Look what he did for, what's her name? Loretta Lynn?
Lynn.
Yeah.
Loretta Lynn and Paul Lynn. They did an album together.
Paul Lynn. In my pants.
Okay, anyway, Theo Epstein may be going to the Cubs, which would be, if he can somehow get a World Series there, would, as we have definitely long drawn out and talked about, one of the great accomplishments of any executive in sports history. The last baseball thing I wanted to ask you, Cal.
I have one more for you, too, so go ahead.
Oh, okay. Who do you like in these two series? I know the Rangers are already up 2-0, although they might be 2-1 there. Do you see the Brewers? Can the Brewers get by the Cardinals? And how much is Albert Pujols going to make next year?
I like Texas in that series with Detroit. I think Texas is the best team that's left in the playoffs.
Probably the most complete.
Yeah, they're the most complete, and I think of the four teams that are left, the Brewers hijinks notwithstanding, I think that Texas has the most mojo going for them. You know, they made it last year. They lost. They retooled a little bit. They came back, and now they're making their run again. I can get behind Texas, and I think that they have the best team. Now, over in the National League, either of those teams could. I think that you want to talk about a crapshoot. We'll use the word crapshoot there. I think both of those teams have an equal shot at winning that series.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Although, if we're going to keep using crapshoot, can we start saying it like Jackie Giles? Crapshoot. That's all it is. It's a crapshoot.
Or like the old Eddie Murphy character when he would imitate.
It's a crapshoot. That's all it is. I tend to agree with you. I think the Brewers, from a mojo aspect, have a lot going for them.
I do not like them, though.
No. Don't care for them. Don't care for them one bit.
Act like you've been there before, gentlemen.
Well, and, you know, the biggest problem I have on that team, and they are a well-constructed team, too, though, from certain aspects. They do have boppers that seem to hit in the clutch, Ryan Braun, Prince Fielder. They have enough pitching. They have a good bullpen. They have a good closer. They're a well-put-together team. That GM has done a really good job putting that team together. They get on base enough. You get a guy like Hairston in there hitting, you know, second, hitting second, playing second base, doing a lot of things, getting on base. Nigel Morgan is my biggest problem with the team as far as his attitude and stuff goes. But when Nigel Morgan wants to play baseball, he can be very good at it. He can get on base. He can field, play center field very well. I think that there's a certain resilience, though, that Cardinal team has. That if they get any sort of pitching, I think they can win that series. And they have a Chris Carpenter who can be a horse if he gets hot. And we saw him pitch a brilliant game in Game 5 against the Phillies, obviously. There's just a resilience, boy. When that team's down two runs in the ninth inning and you have anybody, I mean, even Yadi Molina's coming up, you're nervous. You're nervous.
Yeah, they may have a little magic going for themselves, too.
They do.
They were 10 games out going into September.
They do. And they went 23-9.
Yeah.
For their last 32. I saw a great tweet about La Russa. And having like, what, 14 pitchers in the postseason or something like that? Like, giving La Russa 14 pitchers in the postseason is like giving an alcoholic a 12-pack. You know he's going to use them all in one night. You know he's going to go through them all in one night.
That's a good...
But, Cal, where does Pujols go? Who can afford him? Who had the motive? I want to turn into Donald Sutherland in JFK here. I want to sit you down on the park bench in D.C., and ask you a couple of questions, okay? And I'm going to be dressed like Donald Sutherland. I'm going to try to do it as Donald Sutherland. Who knows? Maybe somebody we know has an instant impression. I don't know.
That's strange that you are dressed like Donald Sutherland right now.
I'm going to treat you like Kevin Costner, and I'm going to be Mr. X, talking about Albert Pujols. Ready? And scene. Who had the motive? That's it. It was good, I thought.
That's fantastic.
Bish, you got anything here?
Okay.
I got so excited when you said, oh, my God. You don't know how much I love that scene. You know how many times I've rewound that scene just to play it over and over again?
I know you
just
love
for
that
the way
scene.
He counts to three. Do you remember the way Sutherland counted to three during that?
No.
Oh. Go back. He counts on his fingers. And he goes, one, two, and then he completely flips his fingers around and uses his other three fingers as three. It's so unexpected and so effective.
Now that's a choice.
That is a bold choice.
That's how you make a choice.
And he calls Costner Bubba at the end, which is, you know.
Right. That I remember. Well, that's what
the
I'm doing to Cal right
now. The
truth
is on your side, Bubba.
The truth is on your
break.
That was good. Ooh, give it to us again.
I can't.
One time only, instant impression.
They're here and then they're gone.
And then, of course, Costner does the great, I don't, I can't. You mean they killed him because he wanted to change things. I mean, it's just the most ugly seventh grade reading... ever. I don't, I can't.
It all goes back to our Kevin Costner theory. You can sum up Kevin Costner's career. I'm a G-man, I'm a frog man. I'm an Indian lover, I'm a G-man. I'm a...
He's a quiet man pushed too far. That's what he does best.
Yes. It's... what do you call it? Well, anyway, Cal, who signs him? Who has the motive?
I've been saying watch out for the Cubs. And if Epstein signs there, what better way to make a huge splash in your new job than to sign the best player in baseball?
Yeah, that would be something. But do they have the money?
Yeah, they've got plenty of money.
And speaking of a guy who can actually hit in the postseason, That's, you know, what has he got, like 46 RBIs?
Yeah, I mean, he went 4-for-5 yesterday. 4-for-5 with a home run. I mean,
drove in like 7. I mean, he is a clutch postseason player. Is $250 million out of the question?
For how many years? 10 years?
10 years?
He's 31. So he says.
8 years? 8 years, $250 million. That's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. He just keeps adding zeros to his check. Now, what did you want to ask me?
No, what I real quick, did you see what went down with the Chicago White Sox manager search?
Robin Ventura?
Yeah.
I did. Okay. I saw that.
Did you see who almost got the job?
I did not.
Paul Konerko.
Oh, that's right. They were going to do a player manager thing.
Right, right. I mean, Paul Konerko is still a contributing member of society in the baseball world. He's not like on his last legs.
No.
That would have been fascinating.
Yeah.
To see a guy who can still play at his level as the manager, as a player manager of a team.
They told him to think outside the box.
Right,
Kenny Williams was told to think outside the box by the owner. That's outside the box. I would love to see that, Cal.
That would have been awesome.
I would love to see the player manager. Why not the player manager in baseball? Why has that gone away?
I don't know why you don't see it more often.
Why has that gone away? I want to know.
I don't know.
I mean, I think it's what could be more interesting or easier for a team to have a player on the field, you know, actually managing the game. I think that'd be so cool. They should bring it back.
Well, why don't we start a letter writing campaign?
We'll get on that. Anyway, moving on to football, Brian.
Yes, sure.
Anything going on with the Jets? I think everything's fine.
The sky is falling.
Yes,
apparently.
Correct. Here's the debate I've been having going back and Survivor. Exactly. Here's the debate I've been having going back as the 2011 Jets season continues on this Survivor bent. The debate I've been having going back and forth is not only about Brian Schottenheimer, and is it in fact Rex Ryan's fault at the end of the day?
Hold on.
Yeah.
We have to go to the newsroom for breaking news.
Go ahead.
Regarding the Jets.
Oh, great. Go ahead.
This doesn't require music because this is serious. Derek Mason has been traded.
What?
Derek Mason.
Traded.
Derek Mason has been traded to the Houston Texans for a conditional draft pick, according to the Houston Chronicle.
Wow. I guess that's a benching, and then so much for being released.
And there you go.
Wow, I guess Andre Johnson's hurt a little more than they're letting on.
But
got rid of that problem.
That was quick.
Took care of that. Did you think that he was a huge problem, Cal? I mean,
no, I didn't.
The most interesting thing about this to me is that three Jet players and supposedly went into their coach and talked to him about Schottenheimer. Yet the coach denies it. The players deny it. Yet the paper that printed it in the Daily News has not retracted it. So obviously the players are lying. I mean, I honestly side with the paper on this one.
Who's lying here? Are the players lying?
I think the players are lying. I think Rex even let that slip the other day in his press conference yesterday when they asked him if he had benched Mason because of that, and Rex said, "Well, it wasn't about a meeting that we had. We didn't talk about that in the meeting." Oh, wait, so you did have a meeting. So you did have a meeting with Mason, but you didn't talk about the offensive court. Like, he almost slipped up and said that he had a meeting with Mason. So I think Ryan and the players are lying here. I think they're trying to cover their tails and trying to make sure that the locker room doesn't get fractured. This is a very interesting move, though. They jettisoned a guy that Rex Ryan had to have. They got rid of Jericho Cotchery for. It seems like a desperation move to get maybe what is a cancerous Derek Mason out of the locker room. But it doesn't solve the larger problem. Everybody seems to think right now that the larger problem is philosophical for the Jets. It's that Ryan wants to be a ground and pound team and wants them to run the ball. And Brian Schottenheimer is under orders to run the ball and therefore has to alter his game plans to do what Rex Ryan wants him to do. That's one mode of thinking. The other mode of thinking is just that Brian Schottenheimer stinks. Okay, that he can't game plan, that we've been saying this for 2 years, that he doesn't know how to make adjustments in-game. He doesn't know how to game plan outside of what he sees on game film. Okay, no quarterback has been successful under him in the 6 years that he's been with the Jets. And he had Brett Favre. And he had Chad Pennington, who went on to be second in the MVP voting the year after he left the Jets. Okay, what players has he made better? And what has he done to scheme to take advantage of the talent that he has? So I'll ask you, Cal, does the overall problem rely or lay with Rex Ryan because he didn't get rid of Brian Schottenheimer? And do they have the talent right now or the personnel to pull off the kind of offense that supposedly Rex Ryan wants to be, the ground and pound offense?
Well, I'll start with the first one. I think that a lot of this has to lie with Rex Ryan. I think we've been calling for Brian Schottenheimer for, like you said, for 2 years, but he's really a scapegoat in all of this because ultimately it's Rex Ryan who runs this team. And that's the other thing that we've said about Rex is that he does not focus on the eye. He only looks at one part of the team, and he has put – now, we think Brian Schottenheimer is wrong for this team, right?
Yeah.
Okay, Rex Ryan has put half of this team, he's put his faith in Brian Schottenheimer to essentially run half of the team. And if we think that that man is wrong for the job, then the man that has the faith behind him is making a mistake. So ultimately, it's got to lie at the feet of Rex Ryan. Now, well, here's the thing. There's nothing he can do about it right now.
Right.
They've painted themselves into a corner, and I had said this to you yesterday. They were never going to get rid of him in the offseason after they went to back-to-back AFC title games.
No, and also with the lockout. I mean, we talked about that idea that they wanted to keep continuity. They knew a lockout was coming.
Right. They just weren't going to do it.
Right. The lockout saved his job.
And they're not going to get rid of him in season because that would be an admission of a mistake by Rex Ryan. And he will never admit that he made a mistake. It's one of his biggest strengths, but it's also one of his biggest weaknesses, his stubbornness. You know?
Yeah.
They're never going to get... So for better or for worse, we're stuck with Brian Schottenheimer. So now what we have is the covert operation of getting everybody on board to come out to the media to say that Brian Schottenheimer is brilliant. Brian Schottenheimer is not the problem. His game plans are good. We all have faith in Schotty. And like you had said yesterday, almost like a script, it's as if they sat down in a meeting and they passed out a memo to all of the key Jet players that are going to speak to the media. Here, this is what you're going to say about Schottenheimer. I'm Rex Ryan. I'll start.
Right. And they're being asked about it. They know they're going to be asked about it. They know they're going to be asked about the game plan and whatnot. So they're coming out and saying the scripted answer. It's a great game plan. We totally believe in Brian. Blah, 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 blah. When the writing is on the wall that it's a terrible game plan, that the game plan that he had against the Ravens was god-awful, and the game plan and in-game adjustments he made against the Patriots was god-awful. And yet all that being said, it was Rex Ryan's vaunted defense that couldn't get off the field once again could not get off the field with a chance to get Mark Sanchez the ball to win the game. And the Patriots go on a 13-play, 69-yard drive and put the game away, all on the ground, and put the game away with a field goal. So the defense is a shell of its former self, Cal. The offense looks completely out of sorts. Everybody's regressed. And it's not all – this was the argument that a lot of Jet fans are having on message boards like the Gangrene and stuff like that right now, Cal. The big argument that they're having is it doesn't make a difference, Schottenheimer or not, because the personnel is not there. Mark Sanchez is not there. So you can have another offensive coordinator, it's not going to make a difference. Now, I don't agree with that.
I completely disagree with that.
We said it last week, and I think you made the point, and it is more even more salient today with what's going on with the Jets, and that is Brian Schottenheimer does not and has not, over 5 years, put his players in the best position and situations to succeed. The fact that Dustin Keller is not a 75-catch, 8-touchdown, 900-yard tight end is unfathomable. And it, you saw it on Sunday, Cal, when they came out and said that, you know, Keller came out today and said, I was being doubled all day. I was being double-teamed on Sunday by the Patriots all day. They clearly didn't want me to get the ball, which is why he had one catch for 7 yards and or 6 yards and 2 targets. That's fine. That means that the outside of the field should be open all day, all day. That means that underneath to LaDainian Tomlinson or the backs or a second tight end should be open all day. You should have one-on-one matchups all day with linebackers on your running backs. Doesn't take advantage of it.
Well, and that's the other thing. And we were talking about this, too, and this goes back to Rex Ryan and where he's got to be held accountable. He was so obsessed with reestablishing the ground-and-pound identity that everybody said, oh, you're a ground-and-pound team. What happened to you? Why can't you run the ball? That he chose the wrong week to make a statement. You're going up against a team that's given up the most yards passing in the NFL. This is not the week to make your ground-and-pound statement.
Yeah.
It just made no sense to me.
And
you know,
that's where everybody's trying to, like, give him a pass. And say, oh, you know, he was doing this under Rex Ryan's orders because they had to get back to ground and pound this week.
You can't give him a pass.
But, exactly. It, not only that, but to make adjustments.
Look, if he, like we talked about, if he put his players in the position to succeed, and then they failed, he gets a pass. Because he devised a game plan that is supposed to take advantage of the strengths of his personnel. And if the personnel can't execute that, then they fail. And then it's not his fault. He did everything that he could. But I'm not there. We're not in the practices. We're in the team meetings. We're not breaking down film with him. I don't know if he's doing everything that he can to take advantage of his personnel skills. But from my point of view, it doesn't look like that's happening.
It's, again, we're fans. But people in the media and players are saying it. I mean, you know, Chris Jenkins has come out and said, the scheme is the problem. You know, Brian Billick said it. These are good offensive coordinators. I mean, is it any coincidence that guys like Santonio Holmes and Plaxico Burress, who have played under good offensive coordinators like Sean Payton and Derek Mason played under Brian Billick, I mean, under good offensive coordinators, have come out and said the game plans are predictable, they stink, and this guy is not very good at his job. I don't understand why it's suddenly insane for a fan to question that, you know, or to question Brian Schottenheimer there. Look, Cal, they play the Miami Dolphins this coming Monday night, right? Nothing to do but go and win and right the ship, and the 0-4 Dolphins are on the Andrew Luck cruise. You know, fine, if you do that, that's not going to mask the problem. There are bigger problems with this team. And I don't think they're going to go away. And you know what? What Chris Jenkins said today might actually be right. Maybe it's a rebuilding year.
But what are they rebuilding, Steve?
Well, they have to rebuild somewhat of the offensive line. They lost a big piece off of it.
But they're not rebuilding right now. If anything, it's a transition year. They're not rebuilding anything. What they're stuck with right now is what they have.
Yeah.
There's no building, you know. The rebuilding comes in the offseason when Mike Tannenbaum goes out to try to fill in the holes on the offensive line. It might be a transition year.
Yeah. Which is unfortunate because, you know what, Rex Ryan's going to burn out. I mean, Rex Ryan looks burnt out already.
Yeah.
And you can only play this braggadocio, you know, bluster and guarantees and all this stuff. You can only play this card for so long before people stop listening. And if you lose, it doesn't work. Period.
Well, he can't play it. He can't play it right now.
No, and I don't think he is.
No.
But you can't go 7-9 this year, Cal, and then come out in the offseason and start talking about the Super Bowl again. And he would. And your players are going to stop listening to you.
Well, and that's kind of where the Joe Namath comments come in.
Yeah.
You know, where I went back and forth on this, and we didn't talk about it last week. I went back and forth on the fact that, you know, who is Joe Namath? Why is he making these comments? Yes, he has a radio show, and he has to be controversial for ratings and all that, but he's right in what he says. The thing that we loved about Rex was that he pumped up his players, and we always argued, what's the harm in that? What is he doing that's so egregiously wrong that everybody's killing him for pumping up his players? Don't you want that? Don't you want your coach to make the players feel like they're the best players on the field? Want that. And it worked to a point. But Joe Namath brought up the flip side of that argument, which I never really considered until he brought it up. And that is, if you pump them, yeah, and we heard others bring up this part of the argument, but they brought it up in a very, you know, they made it a personal, vindictive. They don't like the Jets, so, you know, if you fill yourself with hot air, you know, what are you full of? You're full of nothing, you know? But the way that Joe Namath brought it up, he made a point. Players are going to start believing they're that good, and they're going to stop playing hard because they think that their talent, you know, the coach said I'm the best, so I don't really work that hard. Because my talent is gonna rule the day.
Yeah, it's the helmet out there. Yeah,
and you're seeing it, Steve. You with this team, you're seeing it that they're not going out there giving their best effort.
Well, and it's just the mental mistakes and the penalties and stuff that are killing them too. I mean, look, it's obvious. People watch the games; they see the same things that we do. The penalties, they had four penalties against in the Patriot game that gave the Patriots first downs, including one on a 3rd and 27. I mean, you can't make those mistakes. You can't. You know, and so that's an undisciplined team. That's a team that's believing its own hype. That's a team that needs to get back to the basics, which I know is a terrible cliche, but it's true. And realize maybe, you know what, you haven't won a blessed thing yet. You haven't won anything. You're out there and you're rolling your helmet out on the field expecting to win and expecting things to go your way, and you haven't won anything yet. So moving on from the Jet, and wow, trading Derek Mason, that's something.
Well, it's a conditional 7th round pick.
Okay.
So he's really worth nothing.
So they got a bag of balls, right?
The last thing for me on the Jets is that what you'd like to see right now, we all knew that this was going to be a tough stretch, these three road games. Going into these three road games, you wouldn't have been surprised if they lost 2 out of 3. This is before. Yeah. This is when they were 2-0.
Yep.
Going into this three-game stretch, that's why the Oakland game hurt so much, was because you really could see them going to Baltimore and going to New England and losing. Mm-hmm. And you figured if they could go to Oakland and get that win, they come home 3-2, mm-hmm. and then you go from there. So the fact that they're 2-3, it's only one game worse than you expected them to be.
True.
What you want to see out of this team is you want to see them circle the wagons. You want to see them come home, and this week – get to work and practice, you know?
Yeah.
No fooling around. No more, you know, don't believe your hype because you're not that good right now. You're not a good team. Practice like you're not a good team. Practice like you're a team that's looking to get better. And take this stuff seriously and turn it around. You've got the opportunity to turn it around right now. They've got the talent to do it. I don't have a lot of faith in this coaching staff to turn it around, though. That's where I worry about this team.
That's the key. I mean, the key is simply that right now, as a fan of the Jets, you can't have a ton of faith right now that this offense can get things turned around. Can't have a ton of faith. And again, the defense has been. Look, they lost a game in Oakland where the defense let them down. They lost a game in Baltimore where the offense let them down. And then they lost a game in New England where both phases let them down.
Mm.
So it's time to – everybody's been a culprit except the special teams. Which got them a win.
Which has been good.
Right, which has been fantastic. You could argue Joe McKnight's been their best player. And Joe McKnight's the MVP of the season right here.
It's quite possible.
Look, let's move on to the Giants real quick, and then I want to do the fun load. But The Giants lost that. That's terrible.
Yeah, that was bad.
I mean, you can't lose to the Seahawks, who win for the first time in the Eastern time zone since the Clinton administration. I mean, you can't lose to Charlie Whitehurst. Or you can't lose to Wally Whitehurst. You can't lose to... I mean, come on.
No, he's Charlie Whitehurst.
I know. I like Wally Whitehurst.
He's not much better than Wally Whitehurst.
I know. You can't lose that game, Brian.
I know.
But I think that, speaking of rolling your helmets out on the field, I think they were treating that game like a bye.
I think you're absolutely right. And the fact that Seattle went up 14-7 so quickly in that game, it indicated that you know, they got a lot more than they bargained for going into that game.
Yeah, I think I feel like Justin Tuck sits out, Brandon Jacobs sits out, the center Boss sits out. It's like, it's just the Seahawks. Let's take a week and get better. You know, and maybe we'll take they play the Bills now this week. Now that's, boy, nobody had that on the schedule as a big time game. That's a big time game.
It's a huge game.
And Jet fans suddenly become very big Giant fans this week.
You know, we talk about circling the wagons. The Giants are going to need to do that this week, and they're going to really need to take Buffalo seriously. You know, this is not the cakewalk that they expected it to be.
I don't think that should be hard. But I think that the Giants will match up very well with the Bills this week. And I think if they can just, you know, sort of control the ground game. I mean, look, the Bills won again last week against the Eagles. But it was mostly on defense. If, you know, Eli Manning just has to keep from turning the ball over. I mean, this is not, you know, rocket surgery.
Yeah, well, but, you know, you can't really blame him too much on that last pick.
No, that's Victor Cruz. Yeah, come on, hold on to the ball. I mean, that's 2 weeks in a row he almost gave. I mean, he gave the game away there. And 2 weeks ago, of course, he had the fumble that wasn't a fumble.
And when is somebody going to sit this kid down and tell him, you got two hands, catch with two hands? I mean, every ball he goes for is with one hand, and he's really good at it. But you run the risk of losing the game for your team by doing that.
Yeah, he needs to work on ball security. Hey, Victor Cruz, secure those balls.
Hey-o!
Yeah, look what I did there. There's some surprising teams. We talked a little bit about the Lions. I don't think it's any surprise that Green Bay is this good. You have the surprising teams that are not playing well. The Eagles, 1-4. The Falcons are 1-4. The Jets that are 2-3. Three teams that were supposed to be real good that have not been. There's a ton of teams at 3-2. There seems to be a lot of parity there. Are you buying on the Lions, Cal? You talked about it a little bit. Are you buying on the Lions?
I think at this point you gotta.
Yeah.
Right? Don't you? Think about this. I was thinking about this early, and because everybody's going to be talking about this in a couple of weeks, I'm going to bring it up now. Get everybody to the punch. And talk about Thanksgiving.
Calstradamus.
What about Thanksgiving?
Well, for how many years have we suffered through the early Thanksgiving game?
It's true. How many years has it just sucked?
Think about how bad the Lions have been for how long. And it was always, let's just, you know, we'll put it on, but we're really waiting for the Cowboy game. And then they introduced the Sunday night game. But this year, the early Thanksgiving game is the Lions and the Packers.
That's hot.
I mean, how great is that?
That's going to be hot action. That's going to be a sosuete. I love that. I think that's going to be fantastic. And again, it was always the Lions game was always, are they playing my team? They're not playing my team.
Yeah, that was the only...
I'm making gravy, or I got to put sweet potatoes on, or I got to do something.
Right.
Or I'm eating like a complete gavone and bulking out on appetizers and the antipasto when I should be waiting for the turkey. I always bulk out on like the crackers and cheese or the, you know, there's a lot of good dips going on.
Well, what are you going to do? It's out. You're not going to ignore it.
I know. They put it out. You're going to have it.
I know.
I bulk out, but maybe now I'll be paying attention to this game.
Do you do the meatball soup?
No, I don't. No. What is that? Are you going to take my Italian card away? Or?
No, I'm not going to take it away. It's like the Italian wedding soup, but it's like a little meat. You make the little meatballs in the broth,
right.
And it's nice. You put a little cheese on it. Very, very simple. It's an appetizer.
Right. It's a hearty peasant type soup.
Very nice meatball soup.
Sounds delicious.
Yeah,
sounds
great. But anyway,
I feel like my Thanksgiving is lacking now somehow.
We'll get you a little meatball soup.
See if you make a little.
You make it. You have a little meatball soup, and you sit down and you watch the Lions and Packers. And I just, you know, you got to buy on the Lions right now. You gotta. I think they're good. As long as Stafford stays healthy, I'll spew all the cliches that you want. As long as they stay healthy, and if that defensive line develops as we think they're going to, and they get a little luck of the Motown going. Not to be confused with luck of the Irish.
Luck of the Motown?
Luck of the Motown.
Motown has not been very lucky.
It has not. See what I did there? It's irony.
Yeah, that's myronic. It's very myronic.
Are you...
We have to go? Is that our producer's... I feel like we're on the old Letterman show.
Yeah.
What was his producer's name?
Say it to your pets.
Hal, yeah.
I just do that instead of a rim shot. I just whenever I hear just an awesome failed joke or awesome joke, I have to hit the Cal Burnett theme.
All right, that's fair. That's good.
That's
well,
all
I'm,
that
I'm,
means. I'm not trying to play you off. I was like last week. I wasn't trying to play Nello off. He made a reference to pregame shows. Everybody being clowns. So I jumped on the Carol Burnett theme, but then you were like, well, we got to go. I was like, oh, they didn't get it. Okay.
It was a little too meta in the moment there.
Well, that's my problem. That's why I can't keep a job.
Is that why?
Yeah, they don't get me.
I think it's the pants optional thing. I think you should work on that.
I don't know what that means.
Wear pants.
Is that all that means?
I think when they come into the control room at IMG and you're working on something, you're working on World's Strongest Man, they expect you to have your pants on. That's all.
I work very long hours, and very often I do work without my shoes. I will do that.
That's fine. I had to stop there. As long as you don't have a foot odor problem.
Never.
Like Mr. Costanza.
I'm fastidious.
I had a foot odor problem. Yes, it's time for the ready to unload, ready to unload fun load. Who's screaming in the background there, Bish?
Kitty.
Is that the cat again?
Kitty had a fight today. Kitty got the worst of it. Came home with a gash over the eye.
Oh no.
Oh yeah.
Which cat is that now?
That's Susie Durkins.
Susie Durkins, right.
Susie Durkins, named after Calvin and Hobbes, the comic strip.
Right. Is that the only cat you have left?
We killed the rest, yeah.
No. Let's save your letters and your emails, please. He did not kill his cat.
Yes. Oh, made a nice meatball soup.
Hey. are we done with football, Cal? I feel fine about football.
I just wanted to get PJ's take on the big Lions Niners matchup this week.
Look, I can't believe Detroit. I can't believe it. I also can't believe the Bills. This football season in general is shocking to me. I was expecting really nothing, and I'm getting these teams that are doing these great things. So look, I will probably watch a Detroit 49ers game.
Wow. The 49ers are 4-1 as well. That's the
big point I brought up. It's the marquee game of the week.
I see right. What you did there, Cal.
Nobody 6 weeks out was going to say this is like Clash of the Titans week.
No, certainly not.
Right?
And this has not been Clash of the Titans in some time.
No.
Yeah.
No. Making no reference, of course, to the actual Titans I just meant.
Correct.
Out of time.
Or the movie franchise.
Or the movie, right.
Harry Hamlin. Harry Hamlin rescued many shows and many movie franchises.
That was not among them. So what we wanted to talk to you about here in the fun load, Bish, is hockey, the NHL. Now, there's no NBA, as you probably are well aware. I know how much you've been keeping with the NBA labor situation and the lockout.
100 games down the toilet. And, you know, that's the first salvo. So let's see where it goes from there.
Yeah, this has to be one of the stupidest lockouts in the history of professional organized sports.
Well, it's not any stupider than the football lockout.
No, from this aspect, Cal. And again, I don't pretend to know the ins and outs or the intricate details of the negotiations or what the – all I know is this. I can't for the life of me understand how the owners are somehow surprised that there's a financial problem in the league when they are giving 12 men on the bench 7-year, $125 million contracts. Like you're shocked now all of a sudden?
Well, I don't think the owners are surprised. I think they realize, oh, we got to fix it.
But it's too late. Cat's out of the bag. You can't give a marginal player at best a 7-year, $135 million contract and then say, oops, just kidding. Our bad.
Yeah, no, you're right.
We Occupy Wall Street crowds going down there tomorrow.
They should.
They're going to go protest what these guys get paid.
Exactly. There's no reason for marginal players at best to make the money that they're making. Anyway, there's no NBA, okay? So it's all about hockey, PJ.
There's no front end to the NBA.
There will be an
NBA. They're not shutting it down.
Maybe this year they might.
You might not see a game played this season, my friend.
Yawn.
Yeah, I know. I'd be so upset. But that means that hockey is front and center, the NHL.
Right.
Bish, and what's it going to take for us to put you into the NHL today?
Oh, it's a lot. I mean, really?
Yes.
Really?
I'll tell you. Let me give you some of its finer selling points. You ready?
Yeah, really, because you're going to have – what is to be gained?
First of all, fighting is legal. In fact, it's encouraged.
All right. That's now, all right.
Okay, pretty good little number one right there, huh?
Well, I've seen they do have tempers.
Yes. Number two, it's chasing after a puck on the ice at 100 miles an hour while skating with a stick. I'm appealing to your base. You know, this is like the base of the model here. Okay.
I admit that is something I cannot do.
Exactly. It's something
right.
that very few people can do.
Right.
Number three. Okay. These guys have the hottest wives out of any professional athletes.
I did not know that.
It's a proven fact.
Really? Do they have their own Maxim issue or something?
They have the best looking wives and girlfriends.
Girlfriends.
Really? Girlfriends.
Because they're all white?
That could be. Wow.
Well, most of them are between the ages of 18 and 23, so many of them are not wives.
Right.
Wow.
And also many of these men are Europeans. They're so nice.
Mm-hmm.
No, they have
I meant that as a serious question though. Is that because they're all white? I mean I really didn't mean that.
No.
They're not all white.
That's true.
No, really?
Really?
They're not.
Asians?
There's a thick cuff sprinkled around.
All right. See, I was unaware of that, too.
That was the race was not going to be a selling point, and it will not be. So moving on.
I don't mean that as a provocateur. I meant that as purely naive.
Yes. Say, PJ, how do you feel about mullets?
Better on women than men.
Okay.
Obviously. So you're in like Flynn?
That works.
You have a very fast-moving game. Okay? The games take less than 3 hours. They're timed. Okay? You get intermissions. You get a nice 15-minute break between periods. Go to the bathroom, shower. You can watch a whole game on DVR in an hour and 20 minutes. Okay?
Yeah.
So, and because it's hockey, and there are unbelievably strong allegiances to teams, but they are so open to getting any sort of fans, you could pick any team you want.
Oh, see, that's like pledging the loser fraternity. That's what that sounds like to me.
Why?
Why don't you go pledge Beta Chi? They'll take anybody.
No. I didn't mean it that way. I meant that, you know, if you jump on the bandwagon as a Yankee fan right now, you're going to be a bandwagon Yankee fan. You're not going to have enjoyed the World Series from the 90s or whatever. You could jump on
right.
with a hockey team. Nobody will know.
Right, because it's always rock bottom. You can only go up with such a league.
You could pretend that you've been there for years.
Well, then why don't I start with roller derby? You know, does it have to be the NHL? I don't know.
Do you like singing along to the anthems of 80s arena rock?
No.
That's a lie.
No, that's right.
Everybody does, PJ.
Really?
Yes, everybody does.
Can you give me some examples of what might be played at a typical game?
Cal, you were just at the game on Monday, brought the girls. It's a family affair.
What did they play yesterday? They played a little...
Cal was at the game yesterday, brought the girls to their first sporting event ever. A hockey game, he chose. Smartly. You know why? You can bring the kids, Peach. You know why? It's a fast-moving game.
You just said there was fighting.
Exactly. Teaching the children right from wrong.
Oh, right.
It's affordable.
Go back to the arena rock thing, because I think you may have him here, Cal.
What did they play yesterday?
There had to be some Poison played. Had to be.
They played a little Rock and Roll by Gary Glitter, obviously.
If White
actually
wasn't played, I'll eat my hat.
They didn't play a lot of 80s, now that I think about it. A lot of 90s music was played. Chumbawamba. You fan of Chumbawamba?
We've had that conversation. I have the album.
Are you the fan for Chumbawamba?
Would have loved that.
The remaining fan, yeah.
There was a Poison song, but it wasn't. I can't remember what it was.
Was it Talk Dirty to Me or Something to Believe In?
No, it wasn't something. It certainly wasn't Something to Believe In.
Wow,
would have been.
It was Unskinny Bop. It was Unskinny Bop.
Unskinny Bop.
Oh, they brought out Unskinny Bop.
See?
Unskinny Bop.
You're loving
this, aren't you? You're loving this
NHL. Yeah. Are you a big fan of when the home team scores a goal, the most annoyingly loud siren will go off for a good minute and 10 seconds? But you'll be pumped. You'll be pumped up. And every team has this. Am I correct, Cal?
Every team has it. As a matter of fact, when the Islanders scored yesterday, they unveiled their new goal song.
Oh, boy.
Oh, dear.
I have to get the name of the song because I don't remember exactly what it was. But it's by Joe Satriani.
Of course it is.
Of course it is.
I think we're really close to pushing you over the edge. Okay, and into hockey for this season. So what would be the clincher here? Would the clincher be... Oh, boy. Would the clincher be...
Well, wait, PJ,
all
how do you...
take is, There's got to be something that will turn into a vested interest for me. Something's got to keep me there. I was a very casual football fan until I started to notice the Bills and the Jets in the same week. And then that turned into a whole AFC East thing for me. I kind of got really into that. You know what I mean?
You know what we need to do, Steve? I have the perfect solution for this.
Yes.
If he wants a vested interest in something, PJ needs to watch an Islander-Ranger game.
Yes.
Oh.
This coming Saturday night, first game of the season between the Islanders and the Rangers, you will see passion. You will see rivalry, maybe one of the best rivalries, certainly in New York sports. I think it's the best rivalry left in New York sports because they play each other 7 times a year. You will see two fan bases that do not like each other.
Oh.
Here's another two more selling points for hockey for you, Peach. One, they only play like once every like 3 or 4 days. They very rarely play on back-to-back nights.
That's true. Not a lot of commitment needed.
It's not like baseball where you got to watch every friggin' night. You could have a game on Tuesday. You don't got another game until Friday.
Yeah, there's no chance. I mean, yeah, because I'm really casual about sports. I mean, really, really casual.
Yeah, exactly. So you could go like 3 days and then be like, oh, hockey's on tonight. Sweet. I totally forgot I even liked it. Okay, and then speaking of casual and comfort, I know you are a bit of a bigger man, as am I.
Roomy.
Okay. The hockey jersey, widely accepted by big men.
No, you're not going to try to put me in a uniform now.
Not a uniform. A hockey jersey. Everybody wears them.
I don't. I never wore a Jets tee or anything.
But this is, I'm not talking about a Jets tee. I'm talking about the hockey jersey. The hockey jersey lends itself to the big guy. Your Kevin Smith, your drummer for the Dave Matthews Band. I can go on.
Honestly, I'd rather just lose the weight. That does not appeal to me. I don't wear team hats. I don't wear team shirts or jerseys.
There were a lot of jerseys yesterday. Wait, hold on. You're both talking at once.
I'm sorry.
And I think we lost Cal. Cal, are you still
here?
All right.
I am here.
We knocked
Cal.
Cal
was saying that there are a lot of ill-fitting hockey jerseys, Cal. Is that correct?
Yes.
And PJ was saying that the hockey jersey being comfortable is not a sell. Okay. So you don't want the rims on the car. That's fine.
That's right.
I think everything else we've talked about, I think it's time for you to come over to Islander country.
Here's what I'm going to do for you.
All right.
This is what I'm going to do. I will watch a game. I will even let you record me watching the game. We could do a live simulcast. Of me taking in a game, and you can even turn the sound up on the game. I will try it.
All right, sir.
Clacking boards and all. And then we'll report back.
I'm telling, if you watch an Islander Ranger game, that's your best way, that's your best introduction to this.
Saturday night, Isles Rangers. I want you in.
Do I need to understand the rules?
Somewhat. Do you know the rules to soccer?
There was one.
Like offsides and stuff like that?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Okay, hockey's offsides is easier to understand than soccer's because it's based on a blue line.
Okay.
Okay, so it's not based on the farthest player back on the play or whatever soccer's ridiculously ambiguous offsides rule is?
Mm-hmm.
hockey's different. Hockey, if you're over the line without the puck before your teammate, you're offsides, period. That's an easy one. Right, Cal? Correct me if I'm wrong here, Cal.
No, that's very easy. My my 8-year-old daughter understood offsides after watching one game yesterday.
Easy.
See?
Now.
So there you go. Now, in fairness
easy
to PJ,
now.
She is significantly brighter than PJ is.
No, I
don't.
Put
me at the kids' table in a fat shirt.
So let's recap. We want you to like hockey because you can wear a fat jersey and dumb
and
people like
you're
you
not too bright.
Right, and dumb people like you can understand the rules of the game.
Mm-hmm.
How's that? Did we sell you?
That's nice.
And there's
That's
fighting,
nice.
So it appeals to the base element in everybody.
Right. My lizard brain.
Right. No, seriously, Peach, as an assignment, we want you to watch the Isles Rangers game on Saturday night. Can you do that?
I will do that, and I will report back.
Excellent.
Whether Bishop is in, Bishop is out, or Bishop is indifferent.
The song is called Crowd Chant by Joe Satriani.
So you're telling me that Joe Satriani
wrote
a song for the crowd to chant?
Yes, it's called Crowd Chant, and the fans got to vote on it. The songs that did not make the cut were Kickstart My Heart by Motley Crue.
Sure. Play it out.
Hell Yeah by Rev Theory.
Goodbye.
Okay.
And Heaven Can Wait by Iron Maiden.
Oh, I know what PJ would have voted for.
That is a terrible Iron Maiden song.
Hey, but that's why it didn't win.
That's why it didn't win. It's Maiden.
That is off. That's the kind of song, like, if your English teacher was trying to be cool, like your 60-year-old English teacher in eighth grade, he'd come in and like, okay, kids, I got you an Iron Maiden tape we're going to play today. And he'd put on Heaven Can Wait.
Is your teacher, is your teacher Bill Cosby in this equation?
Put it and the with the thing. Maiden's great. Give him chocolate cake.
I didn't know you went to school and Fat Albert was your teacher. But look at this, you're on fire. Too bad we got to end the show. That's it.
I never did watch hockey.
I'd like to thank the Bishop for producing for us, and we'll get his take on hockey next week. Bishop, final unload.
With the high sticking and the low sticking, and where does the stick go?
Thank you. And over to Cal for your final unload.
I don't even know how to top that. I will say Derek Mason, we hardly knew ye.
Yeah, that was
good riddance. Good riddance.
And my final unload is today marks the 25th anniversary of the Lenny Dykstra walk-off home run. Cal against the Houston Astros in the NLCS, 1986.
Game three,
and a little known fact is I was not watching it live.
Well, you would have been in school.
No, it was a Saturday afternoon.
Was it a Saturday?
I was playing football at Comac High School. I was playing in a neighborhood game that had been planned for weeks. And I will never, ever, ever, never, ever live that down. Basically the only four innings of the season I missed that game. Yeah. We'll have to...
Did you win?
We might have to... I did. We may have to devote an entire show to this, though. The guilt.
Wow.
I'm racked with guilt.
We are going to need to talk about this.
We are. I am racked with guilt!
tune in next week. We'll talk about football. We'll talk about baseball. We'll talk about all kinds of stuff. Maybe even have a special guest. Check out www.rtusports.com for Daniel Aldorando's writing. Daniel's going to be doing some more stuff for us on the site, so check that out. And check out the iTunes version of this. Click on the iTunes link in the Blog Talk Radio player to subscribe to Ready to Unload. For Brian Calvi, I'm Steve Sampietro. We will see you next time on the podcast. Thanks, everybody.